La Trobe's free help app is changing end-of-life care, helping over 1,100 users build support networks for loved ones with serious illness. The app was created by Dr. Andrea Grindrod, who became one of its early users after her husband's terminal cancer diagnosis. I spoke to Dr. Grindrod about why this app is a game changer for families facing tough times.
The app was inspired by research that I did in my local community around how people support each other at the end of life. So how do community members show up for one another when someone's caring for someone who's dying at home? And instead of learning about people's social support systems, what we learned was a few things. First of all, we learned that people needed additional support during that time of caring, but we also learned that people didn't ask for help despite really needing it. They didn't accept offers of help when it was delivered to them. And we also learned that people wanted to help out, but they didn't know how and they felt like they were intruding. And so that led me to think that as long as we have these unhelpful, if you like, social norms around needing help and needing support, but refusing or declining offers when it comes our way, we're never going to get the kind of support that we need. So we're not only depriving ourselves of the practical assistance that we need during periods of caring, we're also denying ourselves the opportunities to experience connection and joy when our support systems want to help us out and care for us in difficult times. And that led me to develop up a paper-based version of all the things that people could do to help you out at the end of life, like, you know, domestic chores and walking the dog and picking up the kids from school and, you know, all those sorts of different things. And then from that paper-based version, which we got a great response from the community and from the healthcare sector, we've developed up this app, which makes it a lot more dynamic, accessible, immediate, and has additional functions on the app for communications between the network, around the certain things that might be happening for the person at the end of life or for the carer so they can stay connected. So it's a dynamic platform that brings that paper-based version and that research into the practice world and brings it to life.
Your personal experience with your husband's cancer brought your professional work into your own life. How did that shift your perspective on the importance of, I guess, coordinated community support?
Overnight, I went from a person researching community support at the end of life to being someone who needed it. And that changed my perspective greatly. You know, my husband was diagnosed with terminal cancer and it came as a huge shock. And I went from the person who was like, oh, you know, all you've got to do is ask for help, you know, at the end of life, it's easy, reach out to your support systems and get the support you need, from the person to then having to ask for it. And that's a different story when you have to do it yourself. So it's not easy to be vulnerable and to reach out. And sometimes when we're going through something very difficult, our worlds get small and our networks get smaller. And so we need to think about it in a different way that's kind of counterintuitive to our desire to kind of, you know, bunker down and focus, to opening up and letting people in.
What kind of help do people ask often through the app?
We have such a broad range of tasks that people put into the app that they need assistance from. I'll read out a few for you. It's really interesting. Things like building an access ramp, bog up the holes, install a hose, install large hinges for the hot water cupboard, change out the hinges in the kitchen cabinet, put a new shower hose on the holder, come over for a beer, drop in for a visit. End-of-life care looks like whatever it is that you need to keep things moving along while you get focused in the difficult and painful journey of caring for someone that you love who is diagnosed with a serious illness.
Why do you think community support is often missing in the end-of-life care?
I think that what's happened with end-of-life care is that it's kind of been professionalised and institutionalised. We tend to think of palliative care and end-of-life care in, you know, hospital settings or hospices and, you know, with our healthcare practitioners. And, of course, that is really, really important. But I think that it's led us to think that dying is a kind of medical event. And of course, there are medical elements to dying. We need exquisite pain control and symptom management that needs to be top-notch for all of us. But what we've lost in the narrative, I think, is that most people are doing their caring in their homes, and that accounts for 95% of the caring. And that informal community support is what allows us to remain close to people and possessions and place that is important to us at the end of life. And it's how we get to experience moments of joy in what is, you know, a very, very difficult journey. So we seem to have lost that narrative of what contribution community makes at the end of life is just as important as what we receive from our healthcare services.
And what's been, I guess, the general feedback you've received from users and their families?
We get great feedback from people who are using it. You know, it's a bit of a shift in thinking. So the program's, you know, developing. We've currently got, you know, over 1,100 people involved in caring for someone at the end of life across Australia. And what we hear from those groups is that it's changing the way that they're caring. It's reducing the burden of care, and it spreads the distribution of care across the whole network. It's preventing social isolation and burnout in primary carers. And it's making it's streamlining the way that we can kind of communicate with our networks as well. So it's making a big difference in how we experience illness and how we experience, you know, end-of-life issues and grieving and bereavement as well.
And how do you see the app growing in the next few years?
We've seen, since we, you know, sort of launched it at the beginning of last year in 2024, there's just been a steady increase in the use of the app and people downloading it and inviting their networks and using it. So, you know, our partner is also Palliative Care Australia, who's obviously the national peak body for palliative care. And in working in partnership with them, we're seeing a steady increase in the numbers month by month, which is really, you know, encouraging for us to see that the word is getting out there. People are beginning to think, hang on, there's a different way that we can do this. There's a different way that I can go about this. And so we're seeing it being increasingly used. And what we hope, of course, in the coming years, that that just actually continues to increase, because what that tells us is that more people are getting the right help at the right time by the right people and when they need it. And if we can play a role in achieving that, you know, we're very happy to be a part of that. Look, the only thing that I would like to say, if you have a listener who is, you know, caring for someone who's dying at home and at the end of their life, or if you know someone in your family or friends who's caring for someone, have a chat to them, reach out, tell them that you listen to this program, and then there's another way that they might be able to go about that, and have a chat and talk about how this could be different. And have, go to the Healthy End of Life program website. On there are some resources, videos to help you set up your network, and to lean in and have the conversation. A network only needs another two people, so it can be small as well as large.
That was Dr. Andrea Grindrott, researcher at La Trobe University, speaking to The Wire.